Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, an analyst considers President Obama's historic visit to Cuba. We'll speak with our correspondent in Seoul about North Korea firing short-range projectiles. New studies find your dog may very well understand what you're feeling.
Dogs and humans may have more in common than they think, and that's not a big surprise considering that canines were domesticated a long time ago.
And a possible country music love triangle has tongues wagging. It's right here on the Voice of America. On the second day of his historic trip to Cuba, President Obama meets today with his Cuban counterpart, Raul Castro, and is expected to press the Cuban leader on economic and democratic reforms. While Mr. Castro is likely to urge an end to long-running U.S. sanctions. The two countries formally reestablished diplomatic ties last July after a nearly 60-year break. At the meeting at the Palace of the Revolution in Havana, Mr. Obama has indicated he will talk about freedom of assembly and speech and urge greater access for the Cuban people to the Internet. Mr. Castro is expected to resist any effort to change the country's 57-year communist revolution and could demand an end to the U.S. naval presence at Guantanamo Bay. After arriving in Havana Sunday afternoon aboard Air Force One, Mr. Obama, the first sitting president to visit Cuba in 88 years, toured a renovated old Havana and addressed members of the U.S. Embassy staff.
This is a historic visit, and it's a historic opportunity to engage directly with the Cuban people and to forge new agreements and commercial deals, to build new ties between our two peoples, and for me to lay out my vision for a future that's brighter than our past. You've had to stand up America's newest embassy. You've helped support high-profile visitors from across the administration and the business community, and now me and Michelle. And I know your workload is a lot heavier than it was, but I want you to know everything we've accomplished so far. More Americans coming to Cuba, more engagement with the Cuban people, civil society, faith groups, entrepreneurs, students, young people, more opportunities for the Cuban people to improve their lives. It's all happening because of you. Every single day, you're bringing the Cuban people and the American people closer together.
Cuba analyst Mark Jones of Rice University spoke about the trip with VOA's Victor Beatty.
This is certainly a historic event, in that it's the first visit by a U.S. president to Cuba in almost 90 years. It represents really a continuation of President Obama's chipping away and now shattering the former frozen relationship between the United States and Cuba. And what's really clear is that after the movement forward that President Obama has made during the latter half of his tenure in office, there's no going back in terms of more frozen relationships between the United States and Cuba. It's only forward. The question is just at what pace.
His successor, who will be in office next January, will his policy on Cuba likely continue?
Certainly, if Hillary Clinton is in office, we're likely to see a continuation and deepening of President Obama's opening to Cuba. Although with the caveat that the United States can only go so far without some reciprocity from Cuba, and particularly liberalizing the country's political system, or at least not cracking down on political dissent the way that we've seen both in the past, but also even today. On the other hand, if the victor is Ted Cruz, for instance, I think we're likely to see a slowing, although not going backwards, in the U.S. policy towards Cuba.
Mr. Obama meets his Cuban counterpart on Monday. What likely will they talk about?
I think we're likely to see President Obama begin to pressure for some liberalization, both on the economic front, but also on the political front, if for no other reason to avoid a weak flank for President Obama within the U.S., inside the United States, particularly in Florida. That is the one group that has criticized President Obama for his reapproach with Cuba has been hardliners within the Cuban American community, and to the extent to which there is no reciprocity in terms of political liberalization, that group is likely to maintain a strong stance opposed to this liberalization, and President Obama will be vulnerable to attacks that he's recognizing and condoning any type of political oppression that occurs in Cuba. On the other hand, if President Obama can achieve some liberalization in exchange for his thawing of ties with Cuba, then that will weaken even the staunchest Cuban opponents in Miami, because he'll be able to say and demonstrate that he's actually improved the life of Cuban dissidents in Cuba as opposed to maintaining the status quo.
Mark Jones says although the Republican majority in the U.S. Congress appears committed to maintaining the 54-year-old trade embargo on Cuba, they're under growing pressure from business and agriculture groups to change that course. And joining me with a look at what's being said on the web about this story is social media reporter Andrew Palchevsky. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you for having me. Well, this Cuba trip is being covered extensively on social media. You're seeing a lot of pictures, a lot of video of the president working his way through Havana in the rain. A lot of people commenting on that, saying, of course, he first president to come to Cuba in nearly 90 years, and it rains on him.
Yeah, they were soaked.
Yes, but so far, you know, you have people who are saying this is a positive step forward for the U.S. You have people on the other side that are, especially Cuban Americans, some Cuban Americans are very unhappy with the president going to Cuba, saying it's appeasing the dictatorship there, and they're expressing those feelings on social media. But it's fascinating, too, that we're seeing so much coverage on social media because a lot of that isn't available within Cuba. I recently spoke with the digital director of TV Marti, and he was saying that there's a dissident in Cuba who tweets out kind of blind because they have a capability to tweet out via mobile phone, but they can't reply or get any responses back. So that's actually something we're covering on our hashtag show tomorrow that people can find out more about twitter.com/hashtag VOA. Facebook.com/hashtag VOA as we look at the social media there.
And speaking of tweeting, it's a big day for the tweets.
It is a big day for Twitter. It's just setting up my Twitter. That was the first tweet 10 years ago today. It's the 10th anniversary of Twitter. That tweet coming from CEO Jack Dorsey. So hashtag love Twitter is trending as Twitter sent out a nice little love note to its followers saying, we're so happy that you've been with us every step of the way. We're going to honor you throughout the course of the day. They said from Sydney, stretching across the world, following the sun all the way to headquarters in San Francisco. And a lot of people saying, thank you, Twitter. I wouldn't be able to communicate with my friends and family around the country and around the world if not for you. And then a lot of other people saying, I love you, Twitter. Thank you very much. But can you bring back the favorite button instead of the like button? And so there's always, you know, a request that people have. Always some complaints, but a very happy anniversary to Twitter. It certainly changed the way that we communicate around the world.
It certainly did. Well, thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A group of astronomers probing a young star cluster just found a bunch of huge monster stars. The star cluster is called R136 and is located about 157,000 light years from Earth. The group used images gathered by the Hubble Space Telescope to detect dozens of stars with at least 50 times the mass of the Sun and about nine others with more than 100 times the solar mass. The nine most massive of these stars were found to be not only incredibly enormous, but together they produce an extremely bright light that is 30 million times more luminous than the Sun. One of the astronomers said that while some suggest the monster stars were created by the constant merger of smaller binary stars, this doesn't seem to be the case with the supermassive stars in the R136 cluster. Instead, it appears that the road that led to the huge size of these stars may have begun with its formation process. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
North Korea has fired several short-range projectiles into the sea off the country's east coast, and joining us on the line is correspondent Brian Padden in Seoul. Brian, what happened?
Pretty much what you said. There were five projectiles supposedly launched about 200 kilometers into the East Sea, otherwise known as the Sea of Japan, this afternoon around 3:30 from North Korea. We don't know if it was another show of defiance to protest the UN sanctions that were recently imposed upon them, or is this part of some ongoing military exercise that they are engaged in, as South Korea and the U.S. are engaged in joint military exercises right now, or was this some sort of test launch of projectiles to see if how well their technology is developing?
Well, the North sees these drills that the South Korea and the U.S. are doing as kind of a rehearsal for a military invasion. Is that correct?
That is what they say. And this is normally a tense time in the border area. This type of activity, these types of provocation are not surprising that they're happening this time of year while South Korea and the U.S. are engaged in their own joint drills.
Is this becoming routine?
Well, it's an annual event here, and I think what makes it more concerning is that the United Nations recently imposed these tougher UN sanctions, so there's greater attention being placed on what North Korea is doing and more being read into it. So we're not sure right now. It's not that it's becoming more routine. It's that if this continues, it's happening at a more frequent basis. There are also indications North Korea is preparing its nuclear site again, where they could conduct future nuclear tests. In the past, the time between a nuclear test was years. The last one before this year was in 2013. So if they are accelerating their tests and their acts of defiance, it indicates that North Korea no longer feels any constraint to try to appease their main ally, China, now that they have these very tough sanctions imposed upon them.
Is there any indication that the sanctions are having an effect?
The sanctions, there are indications that there are ships, that are, a ship in the Philippines was seized. There were ships in China that were turned away. There have been some indications that border traffic has been affected on the North Korean-Chinese border, but there have also been reports that companies and businesses in the border area in China near North Korea have not been affected at all and have not been given any sort of guidance on how to impose these sanctions. We're only about two and a half weeks into these new sanctions, so we don't know if they are having any real impact, and the impact would be to hit the leadership, to make the leadership feel some sort of economic pain. We know that the sanctions could slow down economic activity along the border and then could affect some of the populace, the regular North Korean people, but you know, the leadership is somewhat sheltered and insulated, and there's no indication yet that the sanctions are impacting that level. But it is very early.
Well, thank you very much, Brian Patton, for speaking with us from Seoul.
Thank you.
Coming up on International Edition, your dog might have a sympathetic ear. And a new song from Gwen Stefani. Do you sometimes get the feeling that your dog knows what you're feeling, thinking? Well, two studies purportedly show that man's best friend really does understand you and can tell if you're happy or sad. VOA's Deborah Block has been investigating all this and joins us on the line. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Susan.
What's this all about?
Well, these are new studies. People have been wondering for a long time, can my dog recognize or understand my emotions? So the first study at the University of Mexico is where researchers trained seven domestic dogs to remain still in an MRI scanner. You know, that's that scanner that can produce detailed images inside the body. Now, each dog was shown 50 photos of different people and 50 images of inanimate objects to see how their brains reacted. Well, the researchers found that the brain activity greatly increased when the canine saw human faces. So this indicates, the study said, that dogs recognize human emotions through facial cues. Now, another project, this one was led by a team in Brazil and in England, a co-project, that also showed that dogs identify people's emotions by their faces. In this study, 17 domestic dogs were shown a pair of photos of someone looking happy or sad, along with the person's voice speaking in, you know, a happy or angry tone. And the canines were spoken to in a language that they did not understand so that they would have to recognize the tone rather than the word. So what happened there is the researchers discovered that the dogs spent more time looking at the facial expression that matched the tone of the voice, and they pretty much, you know, ignored the inanimate objects. So when the dogs were hearing positive sounds, they would look longer to positive faces, and when they were listening to negative sounds, they would look longer at the negative and angry faces.
So what were the conclusions to all this?
Now, in the last study, it means that dogs are able to integrate two sources of sensory information to perceive emotion in people in general and not just their owners. And, of course, the first one indicates that the brain waves of the dogs change when they see the humans. So next, the research team in England and Brazil, they would like to conduct more experiments to learn how dogs actually react to these different human emotions. We know they recognize them, but what does it mean to a dog? Do they react the same way as we do? So what they're going to do is hopefully find out if dogs use what they call a human-like principle or a human-like strategy to perceive, understand, and respond to human emotion.
Well, how have you found it works with your dog, Debbie?
Well, as you know, Susan, I love my little toy poodle, Sergio, with all my heart. We spend a lot of time together. He follows me around. He sits next to me a lot. And I really feel that he and I have quite an understanding and that we can feel each other's emotions. I took him to the vet recently, for example, and his little face said it all.
Oh.
I don't want to be going there. I know what's going to happen. And then when, you know, he wants to play with me with his favorite ball, his, you know, eyes light up just like a human, and he gets a smile on his face. So I have a feeling that dogs and humans may have more in common than they think, and that's not a big surprise considering that canines were domesticated sometime, scientists think, between 18,000 and 30,000 years ago. So we started to bond with our dogs a long time ago.
Well, thank you, Deborah, and give Sergio a little hug for me.
Oh, I will. He'll love it.
Okay. Bye-bye, Deborah.
Bye-bye.
Favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
They were country music's power couple, Miranda Lambert and Blake Shelton. Their divorce took everyone by surprise. Soon after the announcement, Blake Shelton bonded with his colleague on the TV show The Voice and fellow recent divorcee, pop star Gwen Stefani. While the love lives of all three have been fodder for the tabloids, now the public will hear from the artists themselves through their medium of choice, music. Nikki Strong of VOA Music joins International Edition's Sarah Williams to break it all down.
Okay, Nikki, so let's start with Gwen Stefani. She's got a new CD out.
Yes, she has a new CD. It's called This Is What the Truth Feels Like, and it is indeed about her boyfriend, Blake Shelton, and her divorce from Gavin Rossdale and everything that she's been through. So she shares that when she first presented the list of songs to her label, they were like, these are too personal, too intense. So in response, she rebelled and said, you know what, now I'm going to make it even that much more intense and personal. And she has. The songs are very catchy, and when it comes to Blake, we find out that she really sees him as saving her and that she is definitely in love. Some of the lyrics for the song, for example, Where Would I Be? It says, I was drifting out, then you pulled me in. Where would I be, boy, if you didn't love me, boy? I can't resist. You have the perfect kiss. But she goes on to sing about how he's rare, he's a sapphire, and she really sings his praises. She's obviously in love.
Well, now, Blake Shelton is also releasing new music, correct?
Yeah, now, he just released a single called Come Here to Forget, which tells the story of two people bonding while trying to forget their exes. So he didn't write the song, but the parallels are undeniable. And it really is the perfect setup for his forthcoming album, which he says will also be very personal and will most likely include songs about Gwen Stefani and, of course, his ex-wife, Miranda Lambert.
Well, now, Miranda Lambert, she's releasing music as well.
Yes, she's working on stuff. We have nothing yet about whether she's going to release something this year, but she is like the odd woman out. So when the announcement came that they were divorced, she was really reeling from that divorce. You really felt her pain based on the various things she said. And in the interim, Blake was developing this relationship with Gwen Stefani. And so rumors were flying in the tabloids. And then the night of the American Country Association Awards, where Miranda was nominated for, they make the official announcement that they're a couple, which, of course, made a lot of country fans feel a certain kind of way. Because it was like, you know, dude, could you wait till afterwards?
Yeah.
But now that she has a new romance blooming with an artist, Anderson East, she's now inspired and she's writing music and she's talking a little bit about her process. So we anticipate that she will release her version of events and her life pre and post divorce. If not this year, hopefully sometime early next year.
Very fruitful material there. Well, Gwen Stefani's new CD is called This Is What the Truth Feels Like. You can hear music from Gwen Stefani, Blake Shelton, and Miranda Lambert on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki Strong on social media at @VOA_music and on Facebook at simply VOA Music. Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you.
Where'd you go? I got so used to being around you, boy. I'm trying not to care, but where'd you go? I'm doing my best to be sensible. I'm trying not to care, but you like drugs to me. I'm so into you totally. You like drugs to me, drugs to me. So pull me out of my misery. Hurry up, come see me, pull me out of my misery. Hurry up, come see me.
If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is committed to promoting religious freedom around the world, including in South Asia. Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom David Saperstein said that while there have been positive developments from both governments and civil society in South Asia, serious challenges remain. In Pakistan, the government has made significant efforts under its National Action Plan to combat sectarianism and violent extremism. However, violence against religious minorities at the hands of extremists continues. In addition, blasphemy laws are still on the books and convictions still occur, with over 20 people currently sentenced to death or serving life sentences for blasphemy convictions. The United States opposes blasphemy laws, apostasy laws, and punishment of conversion laws everywhere. Such legislation is too frequently used to oppress those whose religious beliefs differ from the majority. In India, faith communities are mobilizing to challenge violent extremism. At the same time, India has seen its share of communal violence. One non-governmental organization reported that there was an attack on a Christian almost every day in 2015 in India. Sri Lanka is in the process of drafting a new constitution and is one of the few situations where there has been notable change in a positive direction, said Ambassador Saperstein. January brought the arrest of the leader of Bodu Balasena, a violent group that victimized Sri Lanka's religious minorities. In Nepal, ethnic and religious tensions remain, and the constitution includes a provision against conversions. In Bangladesh, extremists have targeted secular bloggers, brutally murdering them. The U.S. is also concerned about an increase in violence against religious minorities and their places of worship by militants claiming affiliation with ISIL. No nation, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has said, can fulfill its potential if its people are denied the right to practice, to hold, to modify, to openly profess their innermost beliefs.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.